So if you turn over to Esther, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, we're during the time of the captivity, obviously. And there are several verses in this dangerous situation that's being set up that I'd like to look at because they kind of animate some of the principles that I'd kind of like to correlate over into our personal lives. If you turn over to chapter 3, verse 2, when we were out with the kids, we just read chapter 4 about if you don't step up, then deliverance is going to come from somewhere else. And I said, do you think God would have been able to figure out another way? And the kids are going, yeah, God would be able to figure out another way. It was just really cute. Chapter 3, verse 2, all the king's servants who were at the king's gate bowed down and paid homage to Haman, for so the king had commanded concerning him. And you know the backstory about why that's happening. And this is one of those buts in the scriptures. You kind of want to just kind of circle it and go, okay, here's a pivot. But Mordecai neither bowed down or paid homage to Haman. Now, as we get into talking about Haman a little bit, it's going to become apparent why this was such a big deal, because I'm sure Mordecai was prominent among the Jews, but I don't think he was probably nearly as prominent in the nation as he was, or as Haman was. So that's the first thing. He neither bowed down or paid homage. Now, what if he would have just done that? What if he just would have bowed? What if he just would have paid homage and, you know, kept the heat off from the Jews? He had that choice, didn't he? But there was something inside of Mordecai. Whether he was one of those young men that was brought into the exile, you almost sense that he's got the same kind of an attitude that Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego had, that, you know, we're going to do what's right. And that was the first thing I thought of when I was looking at this book. I thought, well, what a treasure it is to be able to walk with people who are going to make that choice first. Not the choice of expedience, not the choice of self-protection, but the choice of doing what is right. So that's the first thing. He neither bowed down or paid homage. So he kind of brought the circumstance on them. Chapter 3, verse 5, then, when Haman saw that Mordecai neither bowed down nor paid homage to him, Haman was filled with rage. Now, rage looks a lot of different ways. I don't know if you experience any personal rage. I've got different things that cause me to be enraged from the inside out. One of them is, and it's always been this way, to see a bully picking on somebody who's, you know, who can't defend themselves. That's just always driven me nuts, even since when I was a kid. And, you know, I can think of situations in grade school and in junior high where I couldn't live with it, because it just filled me with a compelling kind of a rage against what I was seeing. So there are lots of different kinds of rages that we feel. It can be an anger about things not working out the way that they do, about how people treat us or whatever it might be. But whatever it is, Haman had this rage that was all centered around his position and his recognition. His whole life had led him to the point where he could have kind of unbridled authority and influence on this very, very powerful king. So that's the second thing, deep animated rage. Now, when the annihilation, and I had to ask Bernie to look this up because I could not spell annihilation. It's a very difficult word, but we finally got it right after looking at four different sources. So when the annihilation came, the plotted annihilation, Haman paid the king 375 tons of silver. Did you notice that? 375 tons of silver in order to get his way to satiate his rage, because he wanted to have them killed. He wanted to have all the Jews wiped out. That's how much rage he had. And he was willing to fork over. Now, where does a person get 375 tons of silver, even in that day and age, or especially in that day of age? Where do you get it? Well, you probably are a person of influence. You're definitely a person of affluence, and you're probably pretty connected, I would think, in the kingdom. And I try to imagine what Haman would have been able to accomplish if he didn't have the 375 tons of silver to spare. And so I kind of asked the question, you know, was that half of what he had? Was that all but one talent that he had? What was he willing to give in order to satiate his rage and to exact his revenge? So that's one of the things that we run into too. So in our culture, there's the expectation or the opportunity for us to bow down and to pay homage. And then there's also this animated rage of pride, and we get to see it on a lot of different levels. But we're supposed to be set free from that and not have to follow in those footsteps. A third thing that I noticed here in chapter 4, verse 11. So the whole thing begins to unfold. It's looking really bad for the Jews. Mordecai hears about it at the gate, and he has to act. And so who's he going to think about? Well, you're going to think about somebody who's not only been in the harem of the king, but now she has been elevated to a high position. And verse 11, all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that for any man or woman who comes to the king in the inner court who's not summoned, he has but one law. So you got to realize here that a king that can be bought off with 375 tons of silver does not necessarily have the values of the living God. And so when it comes to this situation right here, Esther is looking at it and she's going, I know what the custom is. Even though I have this high position, I've attained this high position, I can't just go in and talk to the king. So she had to make a calculation, and it was a risk, so that he will either be put to death unless the king holds out to him or her the golden scepter so that he may live. And I have not been summoned to come to the king for these 30 days. Now, that may have played in her favor, if you just kind of think about the context of it all. But when she came, she was risking everything. And she knew she was risking everything. So the risk of the golden scepter of favor. So I thought about that, and I thought, you know, the golden scepter. It's kind of a nice picture. It'd make a great book, wouldn't it? The golden scepter. This golden scepter that Ahasuerus held as the king, and which he was able to just point at somebody or not point at somebody, you know, and determine whether they were going to live or die, is nothing compared to the golden scepter that you and I are responsive to, the authority that we're responsive to, because God indeed has the pure scepter, the scepter of light, and that's who we are responsible to. And see, I think Mordecai understood this. He understood that even if, just like Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego in a different part of the country a little bit earlier had said, well, hey, O king, it doesn't matter what you're going to do, because we're going to do what the living God tells us to do. We're not going to bow down to your statue. Now ask yourself the question, and you and I deserve to answer this question for ourselves, are we bowing down? Now, I've made it my goal in life to not bow before anything. one of my favorite, and that includes internal things too. And I think I've told you this before, but it's in the Return of the King with the hobbits, and they're all up there on that, you know, really cool place, and you know, they come up, and the king, everybody bows, and he says, you don't need to bow before anybody. And then all of a sudden, all these people, the whole kingdom, including the king, is bowing down before these crazy little weird-footed hobbits. How did that even get into my psyche? I don't know. But apparently it was a touching thing, because I was thinking about that. I was thinking about the idea of bowing down and whether or not you have made it your goal in life as a Christ follower to not bow down to anything. And I'm not just talking about influences on the outside. I'm talking about influences on the inside. You know, there's the things going on in our culture right now that are really difficult. But I'll tell you right now that I have things going on inside of my heart that are a lot more dangerous than the things that are going on in my culture. And they're actually something I can do something about. And I get to decide all the time. Am I going to bow? You know, it's not the things from the outside that defile the man. It's the things that come from the inside that defile the man. And I'm acutely aware of that. And I look at this whole situation and I think, that's what I'm concerned about with regard to authority. I want to respond to the one who has the scepter of light, not to whoever has influence and who can hand me over, fork over 375 tons of silver. Although that would be a good inducement, wouldn't it? to go against your principles. Mordecai, verse 13, told them to reply to Esther. Now, remember the backstory here. This is Uncle Morty. Uncle Morty has watched out for Esther. Parents are gone. So, you know, he's raised her, and she's been in his home. So, you know, and he's watched this whole process of Esther. Did she have any choice but to go to the harem of the king? No, they're in a foreign land. Could she have drawn the line there? Yeah, but I doubt it. That probably wouldn't have happened. She looked at it as an opportunity. And so did Mordecai look at it as it had been an opportunity. Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Don't imagine that you in the king's palace can escape any more than all of the Jews. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows? Who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this?" And of course, Esther responds. Verse 16, "Go." And I love this because it just shows you the depth of who this person was. It shows you the depth of her understanding. She wasn't recognizing that she had an authority or a guile, you know, that could make this happen, what needed to happen. "Go assemble all the Jews who are found in our region and fast for me and do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. And I and my maidens also will fast in the same way. And thus I will go to the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and did just as Esther had commanded him. And, you know, what a great response to the situation. You know, let's call on God. Let's go to God and let's ask God to act. You know, Esther was going to do what she could do. Mordecai was doing what he could do. But they needed to be reliant upon God doing what God could do. So, those are some of the things that I thought about as I went through the book of Esther. Oh, I thought I had this slide up there. I didn't, did I? It would have been a lot easier to follow. Your glory slide was short-lived. So, I thought about this from drawing a principle, you know, bringing a principle across to my life. And I've kind of alluded to some of that. But the first one, the choice not to bow, I think I've kind of explained that and talked about that. So I just would ask you, you know, what's going on inside of your heart with regard to bowing and paying homage? I think that's the first thing related to my heart. Second of all, the choice to not be silent. And I'd like to look at a couple of passages here. I started coming up with a passage for every one of these, and I thought, no, I'm just going to wait and see which ones God gives me. So if you turn over to 1 Peter chapter 2, in the choice not to bow, I went back and I looked at Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and read that, because that kind of heartened me as I read it. I thought, okay, this is what Esther's doing. This is what the people of God do. This is why the world was not worthy of the men and women that are mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11, because they, even though they were imperfect, they chose to not bow in their culture, in their time. So, 1 Peter 2. Verse 9. "But you are a chosen race. You're a royal priesthood. You're a holy nation. You're a people for God's own possession." Okay, cool. I mean, you think about Esther. I mean, she was at the top of the heap. I mean, she was living a young woman's dream as far as being in captivity. But what did she do? She proclaimed the excellencies of him who has called her out of darkness into his marvelous light. She did that in her way. So it's not just enough to say no. What are we supposed to do in response to saying no? Well, we're supposed to proclaim the excellencies of God. How did Esther choose to do it? Well, she chose to take a risk. She chose to stand up, and she spoke up, and she said what was happening. And that's the only way that this whole situation got turned. She was like the linchpin. She was the only person, probably, that... Now, Mordecai was pretty confident that if Esther didn't act, God was going to do it a different way. But God had placed her in this spot so that she could not only recognize who she was, because she was a Jew, and that was the point that Mordecai was making. Don't think you're going to escape, you know. Just because you're in the palace, you're not going to be able to hide your heritage of who you are. But you were once not a people, but now you are the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. And in fact, the whole passage is very helpful in the whole idea of choosing not to be silent. So it's one thing to stand. It's another to not be silent. And I don't even have a picture in my mind what that looks like for you. All I know is what's happened in my life. You know, when I've heard that voice whispering in my ear or whispering in my heart through the Spirit of grace and saying, Dave, it's time to act. It's time to act, Dave. Just walk toward it because you are my son. And that's what I would expect from my son. Sadly, being silent is really the easy way to go. And it would have been the easy way to go for Esther because, you know, the kingdom wouldn't have been destroyed, maybe from the inside out, because of the corruption that would have resulted in the genocide of all of those Jews. The third thing related to Esther is the risk of obedience. And I think that's what people are always calculating, particularly in the spiritual realm. You know, what's the risk? Risk management. You know, what's it going to cost me? What's the other person going to think? How's it going to impact my place in the workplace or whatever it might be? You know, we're always managing risk. And obedience does have risk. It did all the way through the scriptures. Can you think of a situation in the Bible where people were not obedient that there wasn't risk? I mean, I was going through the last 3 days of the Streams book, and it starts when the disciples are arguing about who is the greatest and goes all the way through the killing and then the raising of Christ, you know, all the way into the book of Acts. And I was reading it, and I was thinking, man, his obedience was complete. It cost him everything. It cost him that, even having that connection with the Father, because what did he say? What was the last thing he said, you know? Father, forgive them, for they know what they do. But right as he led up to that, what did he say? Father, Father, why have you forsaken me? And what a risk that was for him to take, to bring him to that point as God and as man, to get to that point right there, to have that thought come into his mind and into his heart, the Son of God himself, and to ask that question. My God, why have you forsaken me? Which is why I think in Hebrews it says you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood and you're striving against sin in your obedience. Next thing is the reality of the choice of obedience. And I'd like to turn over to, because I couldn't help but think about this passage in Ephesians. And it really, you know, at some point I think I decided I was going to memorize the book of Ephesians, and then I realized I can't memorize any whole book at all. You know, I'm not made that way. My brain doesn't work that way. So I kind of took sections of it, and I've just gone over them and over them in my own personal time or my teaching time to where that, and you kind of notice this whenever I'm talking, all of a sudden a scripture will come out. Well, it's not because of memory work. It's because of using it over and over again, because it's the only way that I can memorize. And this is one of the passages in Ephesians chapter 2, excuse me, verse 8, for by grace you have been saved through faith. That's not of yourselves, it's a gift of God. It's not as a result of works, so that no one may boast. Now, we bump into this verse all the time because it's so tied into an understanding of our salvation. But it's the setup for this next verse. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we would walk in them. And so Esther is a wonderful person, and she made a wonderful decision. But when she took that step and walked toward perilously close to her own death and walked before the king, She was walking in a step that had already been given. It had already been ordained by God. She had the choice whether or not to take the step. And I think I'm in the same position. I have these opportunities to take these faith steps or not take them. And that's the reality of the choice of obedience. So, you know, Esther's going to be stuck with this at the end, just like you and I are going to be stuck with this. We're going to get to heaven, and we're going to be glorifying God, and it's not going to be a matter of what Dave did or what Esther did or what Dean did. That's not what it's going to be about. It's going to be about what God did. But we share in God's glory when we walk in the steps that he's laid out for us, the good works that he has prepared in advance. Another principle that comes out of Esther for me is the sureness of God's deliverance. You know, the confidence that Mordecai had. You know, maybe you were born for such a day, but if you don't take your step, you know, deliverance may arise from a different source. You think it would have? Well, there's a good chance of it. It didn't happen during Nazi Germany, did it? Nobody stood up then, did they? No. So we don't know for sure, but the reality is that God is the one who is protecting Israel. And then also the reality of our royalty. I spent a lot of time meditating about this as I was looking at this. And if you want to turn over to 2 Timothy. This is like in one of the first confessions of faith that kind of comes out in the first century. This is Paul. It's a trustworthy statement, verse 11. If we died with him, we're also going to live with him. If we endure, we also reign with him. If we deny him, he will also deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. You know, it's really easy to skip over verse 12 there. If we endure, we will also reign with him. Now, I don't know what kind of a picture that puts in your mind, but I know what some of the passages paint in the scriptures about what that's going to look like a little bit. But you and I are a chosen race. We're a royal priesthood, not just for this world, especially for the world to come, but also for this world. And that's the reward. That's the reality of our royalty. It's not just something that allows us to make the right choice, you know, that we make in life, but it means that that choice or those choices that we make actually mean something. And I put that together with the principle of the beauty of faith. I mean, I read Esther and I thought, man, I'm sure she was hot. I'm sure she was a babe. I'm sure she was beautiful. All those things that our culture would say. But what a heart. What a heart. And, you know, when it talks about that in Timothy, when Timothy's referring to the whole idea about let it be that hidden person of the heart, you know, that's what Esther's displaying here. You know, her beauty on the outside was nothing. Her beauty on the outside couldn't deliver anybody. But the beauty that was inside, it could deliver a lot.